It's August 23rd, and this is Scott Bergwin with KSOW Radio in Cottage Grove, Oregon. We have on the line Karen Meredith of, I believe, Mountain View, California. She can correct me if I'm wrong about that. Karen is at Camp Crawford, Camp Casey in Crawford, Texas, excuse me. Hello, Karen.
Good morning.
Good morning. Did I get that correct? Are you from Mountain View, California?
Yes. It's just south of San Francisco.
Just south of San Francisco. And here, I thought it was like near the town I was born in is Martinez, California.
Oh, no. Martinez is hotter in Martinez.
Okay.
Closer to the Sacramento Delta area.
Okay. Well, I left there when I was 9 years old, and I think maybe there was a Mountain View Street or something I remember in my childhood. But at any rate, your son, Ken Ballard, was a lieutenant.
Yes.
Was he in the Army or the Marines? He's in the Tank Corps or whatever.
Yeah, he was 1st Armored Division, so he was regular Army,
and
he had joined right out of high school.
Right, he was a career Army person. Is that correct?
I don't know. We were going to talk about that when he got home.
Okay, but he was unfortunately...
He had been in for 5 years.
He'd been for 5 years, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, he was killed, unfortunately, May 30th, 2004.
Yes.
In Najaf, Iraq.
Right.
Okay. I know this because you did, yesterday you told me about the website that was actually is a wealth of information, and one could spend much more time than I was able to there.
Well, if you printed out all of the comments that people have left, the website predated his death. It was kind of my way of showing pictures to family and friends, you know, Ken liked seeing that, but after he was killed, it seemed a place that people wanted to be, and if you printed out all the comments, it would be well over 100 pages printed, so there is a lot of information there.
Well, my guess is there'll be more.
Well, I hope so. He was a good guy, I think you found out yesterday.
Yes, I did, and I think that it's a great window into... in a way, what this is all about, isn't it? I mean,
I'm trying to keep it non-political because, you know, some of his friends don't believe in what I'm doing, but they still love Ken, and so my political views are other places,
right.
Like on the phone with you.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's good. And you are a member of the Gold Star Families for Peace, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And I know... the folks here on our in our little community have been used to hearing Michelle DeFord, who's from Oregon, and Michelle
right.
is, I believe, already left to
She's
come back to Oregon.
This morning
right.
to head home, and Annette Pritchard and Eric Blickenstaff, I know, are also local to you.
Right. So when did you arrive at Camp Casey?
I arrived Sunday afternoon.
Sunday afternoon. Can you say a bit, whatever you want to say, your thoughts, feelings, impressions of so far?
The first day was, I don't want to say it was hard. It was just overwhelming. But not, it was just kind of, you just had to look around, and it wasn't overwhelming like a carnival is.
Mm-hmm.
But I was telling somebody, I said, internally, I felt like my molecules were being rearranged because it was just, there was so much emotion. There's crosses at Camp One, I'm sure Michelle described that,
right.
with all of the names there. And it starts long before you get to the camp. And then there's crosses, 200 more crosses at Camp Two. So you can't get away from the reason we're here.
Right.
Every night they play taps as the sun goes down at Camp Two, and it's so moving. We have a Marine who plays the bugle. Being there the first day, it reminded me of Arlington Cemetery and Arlington West down in Santa Barbara, where they set the crosses up every Sunday, and the exhibit Eyes Wide Open. It was all in one. It just was really... just profound is probably the best word that I can describe. And so you kind of just have to be there and absorb it all. And yesterday was a little bit better, but it was hot yesterday. Someone told me it was 112.
Oh.
It's just hot.
Mm-hmm. And that, if I remember that part of Texas right, the air is kind of thick also. It's not...
Yes, because when the wind moves through and there's obviously a lot of dust, I told one of the Marines that I was talking to, I said, oh, that sounds like an Iraq cough. My son used to... It was just a real dry, dry cough just because of all the dust.
Mm-hmm.
And that was pretty much how it was yesterday. Just very dusty and hot, and, you know, you wanted a breeze.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things we talked to Michelle about, and I had brought it up because it's one of those things that, unfortunately, maybe in any day and age, but it seems to be more now when you have a group like yourselves and the spreading peace movement in this country, the current administration sends out, as they say, the attack dogs in the media, and they've really harped on Cindy Sheehan's family and the differences in her family, and I asked Michelle about that. So is that, how has that gone with your family in terms of your taking a stand on the war? Has it been tough in your family, or is it, or what? You tell me.
Oh, yeah, it has been tough, and I don't think that's unusual at all. Ken's father, who Ken and I left when Ken was 10 months old, mm-hmm. So it's not surprising that we don't share an opinion on the war.
Right.
And he hasn't been quite as vocal. I'm not sure why, but when he gets a chance to speak, he really lets people know that how he thinks, mm-hmm. Ken felt. My parents are extremely conservative. They live near Reno.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in fact, she's told me, we just don't want you to fall in with the wrong people.
Right.
And, you know, when I got here that first night, it was almost like a revival, and I thought, are these the wrong people she thinks I'm going to fall in with?
Mm-hmm.
Because all we want is peace, and what's wrong with peace? Since when did that become a bad thing? So it's very difficult with my parents. They don't seem to understand why my life has changed so much, and that's real hard. But mm-hmm. I have 7 siblings, and they're very supportive. My sisters usually travel with me when I'm in the Bay Area. They're my posse, so it's good to have them close.
Right. That's great. So you have other, do you have other members of your family there with you? Is that what you said?
No. Okay. They're when I'm in the Bay Area.
So what is your feeling, well, maybe today, but I know it's still, it's just after 8 o'clock there, but what's your feeling coming through yesterday in the sense of, are there still more people arriving? How do you feel about the momentum that's the camp has going?
Well, as we come into the weekend when the You Don't Speak For Me, Cindy tour mm-hmm. arrives, it'll be, we're trying to find out if it's buses of mm-hmm. It's women who are men, family members who have lost someone in Iraq mm-hmm. who support the president and who support the war.
Mm-hmm.
So they'll be arriving on Saturday, and there's not a lot of attention is being, but people are aware of that. So there's still just a buzz of activity, and the pro-war people have set up a little camp outside or just across the street from the first camp, and they sit there and wave their American flags and don't cause any trouble.
Mm-hmm.
I hope Michelle has described it. There's three locations, really. The Crawford Peace House,
mm-hmm.
which is a small house, but it's just people, and that's where the shuttles come and go, and you can't park there because we got shuttles moving people, and you really don't want to be in their way.
Uh-huh.
They're very efficient.
Mm-hmm.
And then Camp 1, I'd say there's probably about 30 tents there.
Okay, so there's people spending the night
yeah.
at Camp 1. Okay.
Still people arriving. We had 2 moms, Blue Star moms, arrive from Ohio yesterday, so we like to see red state people, too.
Mm-hmm.
They're welcome here.
Okay, tell me what you just said. Did you just say Blue Star moms?
Yeah.
That's not the term I'm familiar with. So what does that mean?
Well, the service flag, the term, the Gold Star family, mm-hmm. came from the service flags that became popular during World War II.
Uh-huh.
A family would hang a
right.
banner in their
right.
window with a star denoting how many people were serving in the military.
Okay.
Generally at war. So if the soldiers were alive, and they would put, if they had 3 sons in the service, they'd have 3 blue stars.
Okay.
And if
right.
they were killed, then they would put a gold star over it, and that's where the term Gold Star families came from.
Okay. And so blue star designates someone that there's somebody in the service.
They have someone serving in
okay.
the military.
All right. I appreciate that. I know that that's probably, I may be one of the few people that wasn't familiar with that, but that's
most people don't, and I have a gold star tattooed on my ankle with a red heart inside of it. So I get to explain it frequently, and it's too bad most people don't know about that, because we've got 100,000+ soldiers in Iraq, to say nothing of all the others all over the world. So people really should know that term.
Right. Well, I think that that's as phenomenal as this may, or amazing as this might be. I think that this is one of the things, big things, that this whole effort, Camp Casey, that you all are doing has done is, unfortunately, I believe there's a lot of Americans up to that point thought the war was over, that don't really pay attention to it.
That's absolutely correct. I've been saying that the country was suffering from Iraq fatigue. The media didn't want to cover it, and people didn't want to hear about it, and even if they knew there was a war going on. But the other important thing is with all the base closings over the last many years, we don't have as many military communities as we used to. And so you may not know that the teacher, the second grade teacher at the school, has a husband who's serving over there, because they're coming from mostly in Oregon with the National Guard. So those were our part-time warriors. And so people just don't know how many people are serving.
Well, this is an interesting question. Now, this, of course, is your story, not my story, but it does bring up a memory for me of a lot of us, of course, went through in one way or the other the Vietnam era. And I remember being a junior in high school, and my brother, who was a Marine, was pretty badly wounded in Vietnam after being there only 3 months. This is 1968. I'm not totally precise on that year, but I remember sitting in class at my high school in Portland, Oregon, and feeling alone, and feeling like my, you know, this tragedy had just happened, and it's on my mind, and I look around and nobody knows about this. It's not part of the consciousness. Nobody's talking about, not just my brother, but even the war at that time.
Well, it wasn't real popular, too.
Right.
So even if you did, some people might accuse him of being a baby killer, and he deserved it. You know, and well, my father was a lieutenant colonel during Vietnam, and we lived in a civilian community in the Bay Area. We didn't really tell people what my father did, because it wasn't real popular to have somebody be in the Army. And what the difference between the Gold Star families now and the Vietnam moms and dads, I get the sense that, and nobody's corrected me, so I hope I'm not right, but I get the sense that the body came home, they buried it, and you went on with your life. You couldn't, you didn't have the public support that we're getting that allows us to grieve. And so that's one big lesson that this country did learn from Vietnam, is it isn't the troops. They're just doing a job.
Right.
And if we don't like what the administration tells them, then that's who we should be addressing, not these soldiers.
Well, yeah. Well, it's not like the U.S. government military hadn't done some questionable, very questionable things before Vietnam, but certainly Vietnam was the smashing of the innocence for a lot of us. And although I look around and I see that there's still a lot of people who never really, don't seem to have learned from anything from Vietnam. I mean,
well,
that,
we're
of course,
treating the families better, and we're
right.
treating the soldiers better.
Yes, and I think that that's been a part of this right from the beginning, is to try to separate that. As one of the banners of a veteran carried in a peace procession we had here last March 19th, it said, "Support the warrior, not the war." And it was a Vietnam vet that was carrying it, and it's very poignant, very, very clear and important. And I hope people, more and more people, understand
it. I hope they got the message.
Yeah. Yes, yes. So that's so. Have you felt supported? Right from the beginning, right from the beginning or the end, whatever you call that.
Well, the end is when I die, so it's just this journey. Since day one, people have been so supportive of me. My community, the police department, stepped up, escorted me to the airport when Ken's body was returned. They stood by, had a police officer at my house all day during the funeral, just in case someone wanted to rob my house. I find that very upsetting, but people do that.
Right.
They know of a high-profile funeral, and they said, "Be gone as long as you want. We'll be here until you get back."
Oh, that's good.
And so, from that embrace, that you know, you don't even think about, and you don't know what's going on. And I know there's been many things that people have done for me that I felt the result of, but I just didn't know that they made it happen. So people have been, the outpouring of affection and support has been wonderful for me.
Well, let's hope that we all do a lot better. And I usually, personally, I put most of the blame, if you want to call it, on our own government, that really is the one that mistreats the veterans the most. But let's hope this war ends soon, and that all the returning veterans, in whatever shape they're in, are treated with the dignity and respect that they deserve from the government.
Right. We owe them that. We asked them to do a job. They did their job. However they come home, we need to make them as whole as possible.
Right. I'm afraid we're already seeing pretty significant signs that that's not happening, but that's all part of this, taking care of our own and taking responsibility for the actions of our government, which is doing this in our name, after all.
Yes, they are.
So what's the plans for the day?
So today, when we got to camp yesterday, we learned that Joan Baez had stayed the night.
Uh-huh.
And we got there, and it was just kind of a little sit around. The moms talked with Joan.
Oh, that must
and,
have been.
And she's just such a lovely woman, and she had agreed. They said, well, what are your plans? And she said, give me a reason to stay, and I'll stay the night. And so last night, I wasn't there. I was speaking in Dallas with Scott Ritter mm-hmm. and two other people. So that was an interesting opportunity
yes.
for me. But Joan Baez gave a historical review of her peace activities over the years, and she sang and she spoke.
Gosh.
Just very nice. Well, I just learned that she's stayed again tonight,
mm-hmm.
and so she's going to sing tonight. And I think she feels real engaged and that this is where she belongs.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I read the quote that she had said that I didn't need an invitation. I already bought my plane ticket.
right.
Well, she is.
And she did change her. She did change her reservation. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like, oh, I'll stay 3 days, but I'll just tell them I'm staying.
Right.
So she, you know, they had to make arrangements for her to, you know, leave at a later date. So I think she is leaving probably this afternoon. Tomorrow morning, because she'll be staying tonight.
Right. Well, she, for me personally, I look at, she's one of the few people I look at that's has maintained the consistency over the years. I mean, certainly she gets older, and we all, our message matures and all that, but she's stayed right in there, and it's not surprising at all that she came out and both entertained and also treated you all to her history, which is
right, which,
fascinating.
You know, there's a lot of young people here that mm-hmm. Didn't grow up with her like mm-hmm. we did, and the songs, the first night, she sang quite a few songs, and she sang Where Have All the Flowers Gone?
Right.
And all of the Gold Star families were sitting in the front row holding hands and crying. So it was quite emotional. Someone told me later that was the favorite part of Joan's performance, was watching us.
Mm-hmm.
But it just certainly now has a different meaning to me.
Right. And we have the folks that are running one of the websites for Camp Casey were nice enough to put that recording of that song on there. So we can all get it.
Wonderful.
And I plan on actually, I'm glad you brought that up without prompting, because that's, I'm going to be playing that recording on my radio program later today, along with with this interview. So,
well, I think that's real special that people will get to hear it.
Yeah, and it's it brought tears to my eye, but all I had to hear was that kind of person, a couple of chords, and I think the first words out of her mouth before it even got to the main message, and I'm already, you know, it's already affected me. And a lot of that is this is the second one of these mistaken, misguided wars that I have now lived through, and many of us can't believe we're doing this again. But we are, aren't we? And we're going to stop it.
Right, the message will get across this time, so our children or your children don't have to fight the fight like we're doing.
Right, and of course the fear of many of us is that this policy is bringing on something much worse, and I don't want to think about that very much. I keep our eyes on the prize, as they say, and do what we can to end this war and any ones that may be planned here in the near future.
Well, you'll still hear a lot from the Gold Star families even after this is over
mm-hmm.
with.
Right.
But I think this has given us more of a national platform to be able to speak out. And as we've become people become more familiar with who we are and with our stories. And sadly, every day, there's more new Gold Star families. As of yesterday, I haven't checked this morning, but it was 1,864 in Iraq and over 300 in Afghanistan.
Right. It's, in Afghanistan's kind of the forgotten one, unfortunately.
Right, and they've been seeing such an increasing casualties over there.
Right. We read the names every week of the week's dead at a vigil we have here in town, and there's been now a couple weeks, phenomenally, that there's actually been more dead in Afghanistan during the week than in Iraq.
And right. There's a father here whose son was killed in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I told them, I said, people just don't talk about it, but you guys are suffering the worst now.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right. Okay. Well, let's, you probably have plenty to do. I know they keep you busy.
I'll head over to the camp.
Uh-huh. They keep you busy. Do you have, said you were speaking in Dallas last night, huh?
Yes. The Dallas Peace Center. Mm-hmm. We quickly put together a speaking engagement. Scott Ritter flew in. He's an amazing speaker. If anybody ever gets a chance to hear him, his story is very, very clear. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, I asked somebody later, I said, how can he not feel so betrayed by our country?
Right.
When
right.
he had, and it's the years of experience he had. And so there was a Marine,
mm-hmm.
Iraq veteran against the war. And I was speaking, and we had a slam poet from Texas. So it was kind of an interesting group of us folks, but your audience seemed to appreciate it. SMU has not opened yet for the year, so we didn't have very many students. But
mm-hmm.
it was good. They asked some good questions, and they were very welcoming.
Well, good. So do you have more of those speaking-type things planned at this point?
I'm going to do, I've already done, been on Air America this morning earlier, and I'll be doing a TV interview this afternoon around noon. So they're keeping us busy, which is what we want to do.
Sure, and that's...
So we're out and tell them all of the stories that are coming out of Crawford.
Right. Well, that's good, and I hope that we're adding at least a little piece of it here by interviewing you for our radio station, and I really appreciate your taking the time, and I hope I'll be able to get a hold of you tomorrow morning, and we can... do some more.
There will be lots to report again. There always is, and just unexpected surprises. And
right.
So we'll looking forward to talking to you again tomorrow.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Karen, and have a very good and, like as I like to say, productive day. And it sounds like that's not going to be a problem.
No, they make sure of it.
Yes. Okay. Take care.
Thank you.
Bye.